Shalom Rabosai. So Be'ez Hashem, we're going to conclude our Chazara for Fall 2017 Contemporary Halacha, and we're going to cover a number of topics. Among them will be Dinim, based in our Kaos. We're going to do Rav Shachter's Shir on Dina D'Malchus Dina and Mesira. We're going to do Rav Solovsky's Shir on caring for children on Shabbos. We are going to do Rabbi Simon's Shir on Mezuzah, and we may or may not do my Shir on Hilchas Yichud, since I gave it just last week, and I gave it, say, gave it as clearly as I could, so what am I gained by doing it again? Let us begin. Let's start with Rabbi Reese's Shir on Basin and Arkos. The Pasuk says, Eilam Mishpatim Asher Tosim Lefnehem, Lefnehem Velo Lefneh, huh? Two things. Lefnehem, meaning the regular proper judges, smuchim, is the way you should take your court, and your court cases too, and not too. One version is Lefneha Akum, another one is not Lefneha Hediotos, even Jewish people, but they are Hediotos. So we learn from that, the Gemara comments, based on that drasha, even if you bring the same Eilam Mishpatim, these same halachas, still they have to be brought Lefneha based in Yisraeli, and not Lefneha Akum. That shows that even if their din is the same din, it's still usur to take the court, to take the case to a Gentile based din. Rashi of the Torah points out that there are two aspects to every, to the isur of Arkaos. Number one is that you're by turning to a foreign based din, that's miyakir shem elilin, giving covet to the foreign authorities. And secondly, it's a chil Hashem by virtually saying that the Torah can't, Torah content of the Torah doesn't have what to deal with this. Although you might have thought that this only refers to Avodah Zarah, Tashbi says no, this is applicable to all Goyims, all Goyim, not just to the Avodah Zarah. And there are some nafgaminas between the concern for Shmiyak Hashem Elilim as opposed to the Chil Hashem. What happens if it's just a concern for that the Torah could deal with it? So if you use Torah law in a Goyish court, the opposite. If you use Torah law in a Goyish court, that would still be, that might not be a problem of the Torah can't dealing with it, but there will still be a violation of the fact that you're Yakash Shemelilim by going to a secular court. Inversely, let's say you are going to use Halacha, but in a Goyish court, that was what I just said, I'm sorry. Inversely, if you have if a basin says they'll use secular law, that will still be, although you're going to a Jewish court, you're still being Meirin Yad B'Torah Smosher Rabbeinu, because you're saying that Torah doesn't have what to inform us about this case. What happens if the two parties themselves could agree on where to go? They agree to go to a court, or they agree to appear in front of people who the Torah invalidated, Dehainu Hadiotos. Does the fact that both parties agree solve the problem? So here, the Shulchan Aruch quotes Ramban, who says that there's a difference between the two drashas that we just mentioned. Lefnehem, v'lo lefnei hadiotos, as opposed to lefnehem, v'lo lefnei ha'akum. When it comes to lefnehem, v'lo lefnei ha'akum, Tanai does not work. Because b'masam adav shabat Torah, and therefore, even if both parties agree that they're willing to be adjudicated by a secular court, two parties' agreement does not help. That's a case that happens all the time. They say, oh, both parties agree, so it's okay. No, it's not okay. It's nisi d'oraisa. However, the Ramban says, if the two parties agree to go to a Jewish court that is hediotos, that, if both parties agree, that would be, a tanai would help in that situation. Let's say you both parties agree to go to Beis Din, but they empower the Beis Din to follow secular law. Again, not just that the Beis Din does follow secular, but they both agree and they both empower the Beis Din to follow secular law. That would be machlokas, sma, and taz, whether that would be okay or not. The discussion with prenups is based on a rashba. Well, the point of a prenup is, could people sort of agree at a certain point, they will go to a certain, they will do work with a certain decision of using secular law in certain areas. So the Rashba was asked a question of a woman who got a dowry from her father, a big dowry, and she died and her child died. So secular law in that time, in the Rashba's time, was that father gave the dowry to his family and they're all dead, so he should get the dowry back. However, in Halacha, of course, the Baal is Yoresh Ishta. So that was the question that the Rashba was asked. And he talks about whether we will apply the laws of Yerusha here, or the laws of Dina, the Machlus Adina at that point, which was that it should go to the back to the father, because all of his family had already died, so no one's keeping his money in his family. So Rashbi is Soster himself. On one hand, he says, we should follow Umdana, of whatever people, whatever she got married, assuming. On the other hand, he says, but you can't copy Goyim, and if you do what the courts say, that's uprooting all of Hilchos Yerusha. And then he says, on the other hand, that you could be always be mechayiv yourself to whatever you want to be mechayiv yourself when it comes to mama. So he's sowing himself back and forth two or three times. So how we understand this Rashba, we define to us what are the parameters of using secular law when two parties are going to commit to use certain secular law. So I'm going to give you a number of mahalchim how to understand this Rashba that will clarify for us when you're allowed to use secular law, when you're not allowed to use certain points of secular law. Beis Yosef himself says that the issue is only you're allowed to use secular laws, but not you're allowed to use dinei goyim, but not dayonei goyim. So if both parties agree that they want to use a certain secular law in a Jewish Beis Din, that would be okay according to the Beis Yosef. Another mahalach in the Rashba is that the permissibility of using a secular law that both parties again are agreeing to, which is what happens at a prenup, depends on what the motivation is. That if you want to follow a specific law, a specific local practice, that's okay. But if your goal is just because you want to be like the Goyim, you want to be Dome to the Goyim's way of doing things, that would be Aser. Another Mahalach in answering the steers in the Rashba that will define for us what we could do for a prenup or for two parties agreeing to commit to a certain way of adjudicating themselves, is if the whole community adopts something, that's a problem. But for any individual to adopt a certain secular law, that would be okay. Zalman Nechemya, yes. This suggestion is that for an entire community to adopt a secular law, that would be problematic. If an individual wants to commit in his own interaction with another individual to follow a certain secular law, that would be okay. Depends community versus individual. Rav Ezra Basri, contemporary diner, so I think, although I never really heard of him. Rav Zalman Nechemya suggests that if you want to uproot, remember the Rashba had a lashon of, oh, you're going to uproot all of Hilchos Yerusha? So Zalman Nechemya hones in on that point, says if you're going to, by accepting a certain something, you're going to uproot the entire sugya in halacha, the entire Hilchos Yerusha, that's going to be problematic. If you want to just avail yourself to one prat in Hilchos Yerusha, that will not undermine an entire, chelek of Torah, that would be okay. Others say that the problem is not following the secular law per se, the problem is identifying it that you are following secular law. So if you set up a contract with somebody and say, I want to be adjudicated, we hereby agree to be adjudicated by, code XYZ, subcategory ABC, paragraph 1. That would be terrible, because he's saying you want to be under the Gaisha law. However, you just say, I want to be governed by the rule that a person who does this and this, if this happens, this will be the result. You're not identifying it as a law, you're just taking the concept from it. That would be okay. So all these situations came into play when they were, those who compiled the prenup to figure out what would be okay for the parties to commit to from secular law. What about a new point? What about if a person wants to, again, not going to talk about court something in a legal corpus, but you just want to follow the common custom or the commercial practice? Then Rav Moshe says, that's totally fine, that's simply min hag ha-makom. Similar to Rav Kveger says, that if you have a merchant arbitration panel like the diamond dealers or the architect of America, they have their own ways of dealing with cases in the business, that Rav Kveger also says is fine. Great. What happens, let's go to the next point. What happens if you know that a Jew isn't going to go to court? You know he's not religious, or you just know him that he, whatever reason, he's not going to go to court. So can you go straight to court, or do you have to stop at the Beis Din first and first get a heter, and only then get a... Then I had a case like this. A case of a divorce, where one side sued the other side in court, And the other side, Taina, you didn't have a heter to go to court, so therefore you are chai for a cause and you have to pay all my legal bills. Because you brought me to court without a heter. They did have a heter, but whatever. Okay, let's talk about a new point. There's something in Israel called Mishpat Ivri. Let's say we want all of Israel to follow Mishpat Ivri, and is that going to be okay?
What was the end of the last question? Did you ever answer that?
Yes, the last question, if two people agree to go to court, if you know that your opponent will not go to court, the Kesef Kodshim is Mekel, and allows you to take that your opponent directly to court without stopping passing go, without getting a heter from the Beis Din first. If you know your opponent won't go to court, let's say you're dealing with somebody who's not religious and not traditional, you know you have an argument with him, you can just go straight to court, you don't have to go to Beis Din and collect $200. Let's talk about Mishpat Ivri. You want to become a lawyer, you want to become a judge in Eretz Yisrael, right? The Yeshiva Aris, beautiful, right? Not so. All the poskim, through all the generations, point out that it's usher to be a judge in Mishpat Ivri, because what's Mishpat Ivri? Mishpat Ivri is Jews are committing to follow a secular non-Torah law, and they're bound by it, and therefore participating in that would be a violation of, even though the judges are Jewish, but it would be a violation of the Fanei and Velo of Meirim Yad B'Torah Moshe Rabbeinu, which tells us, was instructed us to adjudicate ourselves by Torah law. Here we're submitting to a system that is adjudicating by non-Torah law. Because again, it's not just one industry, it's not just one prat, it's a whole corpus of a secular law. There was a weak argument that the Justice Menachem Elon, who was an expert on Mishpat Ivri, that he suggested. He said, based on a Rashba who talks about a situation, what happens if you live in a far-out town where you don't have three qualified dayanim? So there's something called Arkaos Shebesuria. You have a rabbit court? What's it called? What's the word that they call it? Forgot the word. There's three people, kangaroo court, thank you. Rabbit court. Kangaroo court, you have three people, the three elder, the postman and the county clerk and the pharmacist in the town. They're intelligent, they're respected, so they will sit as a beis din and adjudicate. So the Rashba says that that's okay. So based on that, Rav Menachem Elon said, similarly, if you go to a Mishpat Ivri, that should be the same din, right? And the poskim say, no, that's not right. Oh, and more, furthermore, the Meiri says that these people in Erekos Shebesuria are allowed to consult law books, non-Jewish law books. So you see that it's okay for there to be Mishpat Ivri. So this is rejected by the poskim. First of all, that suggestion of the Rashba to function with Erekos Shebesuria is only if there are no learned dayanim. If you're living in Tel Aviv and Bnei Brak is only a stone's throw away, no pun intended, that was funny, you have no right to rely on Erekos Shebesuria. Similarly, a second issue, the Chazon Ish points out, the heter to use Erekos Shebesuria is for them to use their own logic because they don't have any other tools to adjudicate with. But if they are to be bound by a set of laws, a secular set of laws to which they are bound, like, for example, in Eretz Yisrael, Mishpat Ivri, that would not be okay. And even when the Meiri said that they have the right to consult their law books, that's just if they want to educate themselves, they can consult their law books. But here, in Mishpat Ivri, it's not just that the judges are bound to adjudicate based on those law books, and that would be a problem. Therefore, Gedolim, Rav Avadia, Rav Yitzchak Frank, Rav Herzog, all reject the Mishpat Ivri. Let us continue. Let's say.
So that was a Chazon Ish, or?
Among many others. That was a Chazon Ish, and Rav Avadia Yosef, and Tzvi Pesach Frank, and Rav Herzog. The vast majority of all the poskim in the past, since 1947, I guess. What happens if you have arbitration, which again in a industry specific area like diamonds or architecture, that you're allowed to follow, you're allowed to go to an arbitration. What about if the arbitrators are all non-Jewish? That also would be okay if again it's industry specific and they're following the minhag hasochrim of that specific industry. However, if they're bound by laws, that would not be okay. But if it is an arbitration in that area of expertise, it would be okay. Let's finish off this shiur with one question which is going to have a lot of answers. When is it, yes, permitted for me to take a fellow Jew to court? The first one that we'll talk about is the main one, is if your opponent, I want to take you to court, and you refuse to go with me to Beis Din. So then I could, of course, go to court. Where does this cup that there's a heter to go to our cup? So there's a mission again, Peches, that says that if you have a get, me'usa, under certain parameters, the goyim could be chov to nosel v'omrim lo ase mashi Yisrael omrim lecha. You're allowed to enlist the goyim to enforce the psak of the Beis Din. That's the first source. The second source is Gemara Bava Kama that says if you call to your friend and he doesn't respond, throw a wall against him. And the Rishonim say, what does it mean to throw a wall against him? I mean, if you call him to court and he doesn't respond, throw a wall, meaning the secular court, against him. So that these two sources work well according to the Chasam Sofer's understanding, because what's the whole logic of a heter of the Israel cause? Because you're undermining halacha. But if here, according to either of these two scenarios, either the Asim Ashi Yisrael Otsim Lecha, or you tried to Beis Din and he didn't come, so that's why you bring him. So it's as though the Beis Din is overseeing the case. The Beis Din is delegating the case to a court. So it's not going against the Beis Din, it's not going against the Torah, it's just using the secular system to enforce what you're not able to. So it's not a slap in the face to Torah. That's the first. So again, so the first case that we're going to say that you're allowed to take somebody to court is if your opponent refuses to go to Beis Din. Second case is, let's say you were taken to court, and after you were taken to court, I'm sorry, somebody took you to court and you won. So now that the one who took you to court wrongly, he saw that he loses. So is he allowed to go and follow up in Beis Din? So here, there are 2 days in the Ramah. The Ramah concludes that he's not able to. You took a guy to court and you lost. Now you're going to try your second try in Beis Din? Disgusting. Stop in your face. Of course not. However, what about the opposite? Let's say you were taken to court wrongfully. You should have been taken to Beis Din. And you lost. The court ruled like your plaintiff. And you were schlepped to court. Do you now have the right to, after the court ruled against you, could you now take your opponent to Beis Din? So here, Mayasham says, it depends on your reaction. If when you were taken to court, you said, no, I don't want to go to court, he didn't listen to you, he forced you, then you could take him to Beis Din afterwards. If, however, you acquiesced, you went to court and you followed up, and you went through the court system and you happened to lose, then, I'm sorry, the fact that you followed along with his playbook will prohibit you from using your right to go to Beis Din in the future. Marshach. Next case is what happens, something that we mentioned, the case of Kodesh, if it's Yadur, there's a Chazaka that your opponent would never appear in Beis Din, that we quoted already, the case of Kodesh says it's mutter to go straight to court. Number four is, let's say there's already a Psak Din, Beis Din already issued a ruling, but now you just need to go to court to enforce that ruling. So there, you're allowed to go straight to court. You don't need a heter to go to court to enforce a Psak of a Beis Din, because it's clear you went to base. You just want the enforcement. That's okay.
That's like the court.
That avoids going to secular court. Here we're talking about that there is a chov and you're using the court. It could be. The next one is chov bar. Let's say there's a tuition agreement and the parents didn't take the tuition agreement. So the yeshiva is permitted to take the fellow to court, because there are no two ways around it. You can collect that in civil court. Number six is what's called a TRO, temporary restraining order. If you want to just freeze assets, so you're not actually asking Beis Din to adjudicate or to paskin or to rule, you just want to hold the money where it is so that he doesn't, you know, send it out to his other accounts and hide it from you, so you're not going to be able to get anything later. So since Beis Din anyway, goes to the Rav Moshe Feinstein says, since anyway Beis Din doesn't have the ability to issue such an injunction, so you could go to the court to get an injunction, if necessary. And finally, of course, if you want to take a guy to court, then it is permitted to do so, because you know he's not going to go to Beis Din. That's the end of that shiur. easier than you thought, right?
Right.
Moving on. Let's go to the next year, which is caring for children on Shabbos. Rabbi Sobolowski's year. So when we talk about milking, obviously, when we talk about nursing, using a pump for a woman to express milk would be an issa d'oraisa of disha. The same way milking a cow would be d'oraisa in the normal way of doing so. However, even though you could sometimes feed a baby who's not nursing, you could feed them formula, but if a mother's in pain, let's say she's somewhere else, not with her baby, how could you alleviate her pain if it's an issa d'oraisa to express the milk? So what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to knock it down to an issa d'rabbanan, and then if it's welcome tsar, we'll have a heta. How do you knock it down to an issa d'rabbanan? You let the milk go li'ibud. So if you let the milk go li'ibud, that either makes it a malacha she'ena tzrich l'gufa, because you're not doing it for the purpose of gaining the milk, so it's only issa d'rabbanan. Others say that by disha, that's shelo l'tzorech, it's not even a malacha at all. So if it's not l'tzorech, there's no malach at all. So the nafkamina between these two things is, okay, fine. So either way, you have to let the milk go to ibud. You should put a little dishwashing soap in the bottom of the pump, and she could express the milk into this pump, going straight into the dishwashing soap, and it will go to ibud, and therefore it will be mutter for her to alleviate her pain. If it's an electric pump, you could have a guy turn it on, you have a Shabbos clock turn it on. If she's in a lot of pain and there's no other option, no guy, no Shabbos clock, as a last resort, you can use kilachar yad to. If she's in a lot of pain, kilachar yad to turn on the pump, the electric pump with your hand, because that's assuming. And don't tell it to your balabatim, but that's assuming that electricity would be drabanan. So to do kilachar yad b'makom tsar, there are those who permit. Let's talk now about making baby cereal or oatmeal. The issue here is an issue of lisha. Lisha is you're taking powder, water, and creating a dough. So there's machlokas rishonim, machlokas tanaim rishonim shulchan aruch. What's the moment of iser? Is it the moment of iser? The moment of gibel is the shas nesina samayim, or is it when he actually does the gibel, the kneading with a k? And therefore, the halacha is that if you make a shinu, even though shinuyim only knocks it down to the rabbanan. However, in the case of lisha, shinu makes a mutter entirely. So if you do a shinui b'shas lisha, that will be mutter. The problem is we don't know what shas lisha is. So we'll do both. If we do a shinui during the shas nesina samayim, you'll do it in the wrong order. And you do a shinui in the shas gibel by mixing it in an unusual way, what would that be? Let's say with a crisscross, maybe using your finger, maybe shaking it instead of actually mixing it. So then, if you are machmir for both shitas, you'll cover your bases, you'll do a shinui in both areas, you'll switch the order of the liquid and the powder, and you'll switch the way you do the gibel, the kneading, then we'll be makel if what? Well, if it's drabana. How can we knock lisha down to be lisha drabana? By having a blila raka, a very liquidy, watery consistency, as opposed to more of a pancakey texture, as opposed to a bread type of texture, which would be a blila ama. So if you have a very loose, a lot of water, and you do the shinui in the order of water versus powder, and you do all these shinuyim in the way of mixing, then b'shas hatzorech, you could be makel for a baby. Again, none of these clues are not great, so if a baby needs it, you can. However, if you want to have it, I've gotten this shayla, at least twice, I think. Somebody came up to me and said, hey, if I use a klishlishi, let's say, to make myself oatmeal, those oatmeal packs, what could be the problem? The problem is that, okay, d'oraisa, you're not going to be violating lisha, but even if you do all these shinuyim, again, it's all shori b'machlokas, and it's only to be used b'shas hatzorech. So therefore, it's not. If it's a tzorech, maybe you could, but otherwise, we wouldn't rely on the situation that we just described to allow you to make yourself some oatmeal on Yom Tov, on Shabbos. Let's now talk about chopping vegetables or meat or chicken up into small pieces. So tochein, if you chop something into small pieces, tochein is an issur d'oraisa. How small is small? The Sefer Yerayim says we have no clue. So therefore, we're going to have the following kula to enable that. The Rashba says that just like we have a heter in the halakhs of Borer, that la'alter is a heter, if you're doing it immediately before the surah, because that's called derech achil and not derech melacha. So too, says the Rashba, we could extend that halakha from Borer to tochen as well, that if you do it right before, if you tochen right before the meal, it will be mutter. The Rama is make like this Rashba, this cool of the Rashba, that if you do it right for the meal, it would be mutter. But the Achronim say that that's not so simple, and therefore you have to also try to use larger pieces than usual, so as that you to double yourself, to cover yourself doubly. A, the Rashba who says that's right before the meal, it's okay. And B, the pieces are not so small, so that's also going to make it better. One other aspect of tocheid is mushing banana and avocado. My wife asked me this shaila 2 weeks ago. How do I mash a banana on Shabbos? So the Chazmish said that this is taka going to be an issa d'oraisa. He holds that the heter, and you won't even have the kul of the Rashba of the altar, because the kul of the Rashba of the altar, says the Chazmish, is only when you cut things, when you dice things to small pieces, that's where you have the kula. But real tochin, like the mashing and the grinding that we do, like when we make wheat curdles into a flour, which is a real mashing, grinding motion, that would be so usur that it wouldn't even have the heter of the Rashba of La'alter, even if it's some of the Suda. So Chazanish holds his mamon is an issur d'oraisa to smush an avocado or a banana. However, which, by the way, the Igros Moshe says, I don't really understand any of that, because the Igros Moshe says it's not a tochen at all. Tochen is taking a large piece and breaking it down to small pieces. When you mush a banana or mush avocado, you're not doing that at all. There are no small pieces. You're left with a solid, and you end up with a mush. There's no breaking down to small pieces, which is presumably the definition of tochen. So Ramosh says this whole thing's no problem at all. It's mutl gamrei. However, the Chazanish holds nisa d'oraisa. Chazanish, therefore, we will therefore listen to the Chazanish's eitzah. The Chazanish had an eitzah, even though he holds typically it's nisa d'oraisa. If, however, you do the mushing kila achrayad with the back of a spoon, the back of a knife, that the Chazanish is mako. Ramosh says, I don't understand why that should help, because Shini knocks it down to the Rabbanim. If you hold this Nisa D'oraisa, that will make it a Rabbanim. But since I hold that the whole thing should be mutter in any way, so if the Chazanish who asks it D'oraisa says, but if you use a Shini, it will be mutter L'chatchila, so you could rely on the Kula of the Chazanish, right? Chazanish gives you a Kula, you take it and you run. So Halach L'maisa, if you have an avocado or a banana, this is what I told my wife last week, you could mush it with the back of a spoon or a knife. Let's go to the next one. Let's talk about diaper changing. So there's, of course, the tremendous sugya of using baby wipes, which, when you squeeze it, might be a violation of kibbutz, livun, dash, schita. Kibbutz and livun are one av malacha. Dash and schita are different av malacha. It's not four av malacha, it's two. So all different kinds of questions. If it's absorbed into the fabric and you're squeezing it out of the fabric, those could be potential issues. However, that's not the metzias, if the metzias is that the liquid is only that you're using on a wipe to wipe the bottom of a baby, that's only on the surface liquid, but it's not squeezing out from inside the fabric, that would be mutter. And that is a good discussion in the postgame. What about diapering as far as the tabs, the adhesives? So here, we have to know that when the Rambam discusses Korea and its sister malacha of Topher, that doesn't just apply to strings, threads, but also is midabik niyaros and mafrid niyaros. Stickers is an issa d'oraisa. Putting a sticker on a piece of paper is an issa d'oraisa. Taking a sticker off a piece of paper is an issa d'oraisa. Therefore, if your diaper has a tab, an adhesive tab, that could be a serious issue. Velcro is always fine, because if you look at Velcro underneath a microscope, you'll notice they're just very small hooks. One part of the Velcro has little circles, the other part of the Velcro has sticks with a hook at the end of it. It's very small. But when you put it together, the hooks catch the loops. That's what Velcro is. So if that's mutter, take off, put on, no problem. But as far as if it's a real glue adhesive, that should be a problem, right? Well, maybe we could say that kesher, just like kosher is only a problem if it's kosher shel kayama, maybe also, we're not talking about tying a knot here, we're talking about tofer, about madbik minioros. Maybe tofer also might be okay if it's not shel kayama. Well, that's machlokas. And lechatchila, it's better Ramah sounds like it's better not to do a kosher that's a temporary, I'm sorry, a tofer that's a temporary tofer. So, okay, but maybe there's room to be mako when you're putting on a diaper, but wait a second, when you take out a diaper that's a dirty one, you want to close it up afterwards to throw it down the bin so it doesn't fall all over the place. There, it's not, it is shel kayama, because you're putting on the adhesive and leaving it there, lol and vibe. It's going to go like that into your garbage cans, could go like that into the garbage shop, and go like that into the landfill. Maybe that is called shel kayama. So even there, some poskim say, you're right, it happens to be shel kayama, but where are you putting it? You're putting it to be destroyed, to be thrown out, so you couldn't really care less. Maybe even though physically it's shel kayama, but I don't know the good word, psychologically or intent, as far as your intent is concerned, it's meaningless. So that might be also something to rely on. Okay, as far as diaper rashes, this shaila happens all the time, both for babies who have diaper rash and also for adults who have skin. I get this shaila a few times a year. So there's two svaras to permit putting ointment on the bottom of a baby if they have a diaper rash. The way the Chazanish says to do it is you just plop it on, and you don't rub, you plop it on, you put on a diaper, and as the baby moves around, it will go where it needs to go. Why should that be okay? So the Shemir Shaz Kilchasa says, because it's Kilachar Yad, okay, great, that's the Shino, it should still be Aser. Oh, but since babies are like a Chola, we allow Kilachar Yad for a baby who has a din of a Chola. Rabbi Ribiyad is more makel, he says, no, it's not Memareach, if you just plop something on, that's not called Memareach. Memareach is smoothing it on. But if you're just plopping it on and it just gets smoothed out by the motion of the baby, that's not Memareach whatsoever. Okay. Let's finish off this year as far as two more points. Point number one. What happens if there's no Erev and your baby is... He walked to shul, and on the way home from shul, he's a little more tired and he doesn't want to walk home from shul. So what do? So, the best thing is to bribe him. Offer him lots and lots and lots of candy if he gets home or gets somewhere. Second best is to get a guy, because since it's a Carmelite, we live in a Carmelis, and Amir Akum is a Shavuos, so it's a Shavuos to Shavuos, but Makom, crying baby as a Din Chola, or getting him home and not being in the street all day might be a Tzorach Mitzvah, enjoying Shabbos, so Shavuos to Shavuos, Makom Mitzvah. But again, you have to be careful with that, because typically we don't want Goyim pushing carriages just stam on Shabbos with his new era. But again, Makom Tzorech, it ought to be okay because Shavuot Tishvus Makom Esah. And if even that's not available because there's no Goyim around, so then you have to rely on Pachas Pachas Midalat Amos or Shnayim Shasa Uha, some other rabbinic way to get the baby home. Finally, let's talk about stitches. Stitches is an important issue because I had this shaila a few weeks ago. His son actually is there's a plastic surgeon in my neighborhood whose son is actually a Talmud in our yeshiva, and he's supposed to be I was told that that's the guy you want to stitch up your son. So my son fell on Shabbos afternoon, and we wanted it done by this plastic surgeon. So I was all fafrumt, and I knew that for a Jew to do stitches is nisid d'raisa. For a guy to do it, that's fine. It's nisid d'rabbanan for a whole, b'chol guf, that would be fine. But I wanted the Jew to do it. So for a Jew to do a stitch, it's real nisid d'raisa. So forget about me getting to him. I could have a guy drive us, but him doing the stitches would be nisid d'raisa. So I didn't. Afterwards, I actually had Rav Rubin, the author of Orchas Shabbos, was in my shul like the next week. And I asked him, he told me some very, 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 very makel dikashitas that he heard from Shlomo Zalman. And when it comes to stitches, he said a great line from Shlomo Zalman. Hachaydakim enam yodim matai ois Shabbos. Ois Shabbos is when Shabbos goes out. Germs don't know when Shabbos goes out. You're worried about an infection. Oh, but it's only 2 hours till Shabbos goes out, 4 hours till Shabbos goes out. You know what time Shabbos is out. The germs don't. So that's a cute line from Shlomo Zalman. There might be a tear for a child who needs stitches. Of course, we're not talking about a pikuach nefesh. Do whatever you need, but if it's not a pikuach nefesh, but still there's a chashash of infection, there is room to allow possibly, certainly, any yisud rabbanon, and perhaps the tying even. You shouldn't drive. You should only drive if it's a matter of life and death. But for the doctor to. It was also complicated because here we did have the option of a non-Jew tying it. We just wanted it to be done by the Jew. And I think Rav Reuven told me that Rav Shlomo Zalman would be matur even that. Okay.
Does this apply by an adult also, or this the stitches thing is just by a kid? The
depends on the situation. Meaning an adult, it depends on, again, if the person is a Chalashem Basakana. So then, again, if it depends on the how dangerous it would be. I mean, I waited because doctors told me you could wait. One of the people on my block, doctors, they said you could wait. Don't worry about it. But apparently, Rishon Zalman would be more lenient than I was. Nebulizers. This also, I had this shadow once or twice. What happens if the baby has asthma or something, has to take a nebulizer? So if you have it on a Shabbos clock, great. If you have it on a guy who could turn it on, great. because it's again Shusta Shvus, Malcolm Mitzvah, Malcolm Choli. However, if there's no one around, no guy, it's 3 o'clock in the morning and your baby is having a little breathing attack, so again, we're not talking about Pikuach Nefesh. So it would be, since we assume that electricity, again, don't tell your Balabata, but since we assume that electricity, not like Chazanish, electricity is only the Abanan, so doing a, if you do a Kalach Hayat, it would be Shvus, the Shvus, Malcolm Choli, Malcolm Mitzvah. That would be okay. If there's no other option, you needed to turn a nebulizer, you could turn it on b'shas adcha.
So you just don't tell the balabatim the reason why.
Balabatim should never know that electricity is that we pass the mikra din electricity is derabbanan. They have to assume that electricity is also deraisa, and they forever they should be born and die assuming electricity is deraisa.
You're telling them they're allowed to do it. You're not telling them.
Yeah. You're going to tell them because of this situation. You don't explain yourself.
Okay.
Because of the situation. Because of this situation, you're allowed, because the baby needs it, so important, you'd be allowed. If there's no other option, I give you permission to turn it on, b'shinoi. The rabbi, it's electricity. So this is not allowed. What? I love Balabatim. I have 300 wonderful Balabatim. I just, there are certain those who are listening to this shir can understand, you know, the subtleties of halacha. The broad population, what? That's correct. No, I don't mean Balabatim Dachshunds. I mean, it's important for people. There's so many inroads that people are trying to make against. There's so much technology that people are trying to break through, you know, the issue of electricity. You have this Shabbos switch. Even Ramosha didn't even like Shabbos clocks. Ramosha didn't allow Shabbos clocks, Rabbi Osai. And we're makel to, yeah, Ramosha would say you're not allowed to put an air conditioner on a Shabbos clock. Is there anyone in this room who follows that Ramosha? No. Ramosha? What? You don't have a Shabbat, okay, whatever.
I mean, they're all at the time anyway.
No, I'm not talking about central. I'm talking about Shabbos clock, you know, like the window units. So we've been makel, not like Ramosha. Ramosha says you're not allowed to do anything, even on a Shabbos clock. He didn't even want to be matir lights, but he lost that fight early on. And here now you have people who not only want to do that, but they want to actually turn things on directly on Shabbos with a grumma, with a whatever. So we're dealing with a slippery slope that every 3 years is going to be another technology by a half-baked Talmud Chacham who's going to try to be matir another way to use electricity of some way. Yeah, the Shabbos, right? Texting on Shabbos, the Shabbos app. So you have to realize that all the Gedolim since electricity has been harnessed have come out pe'echal that it's aser. You're right. When there's a Malkum Tzarech like a Choli, you have to know, you and I have to know that b'malkum tzarech v'recholi and b'shinui, so then there's room to maneuver, but that's only to be used b'malkum choli and for emergency personnel and the like, but not as a, you don't want it to ever chas v'shalom become a widespread to take advantage in a widespread way of otherwise if we lose electricity then Shabbos will be, the tzur of Shabbos will be gone. Fine. Finishing up this shir, as far as children asking them to do malacha for you, that's an explicit pasuk in Aseret Dibros. In other words, don't do it. If you see a child about to do malacha and he's igil l'chinuch, you have to even stop him. What about asking a child to do nisr d'rabbanan? That's a big machlokas. If you could be machil katan nisr d'rabbanan biyadayim, it's machlokas rishonim. And the mikr has the Shulchan Aruch tries to be machmir that. You should be machmir, but b'shas hadchak, the Mishnah Berurah says b'shas hadchak, you could be mekel to allow a katan to do an issur d'rabbanan if and only if it is l'tzarech hakatan. So that means if the light is on in your room, so it depends. Does your baby sleep in your room or not? My baby still sleeps in my room, Baruch Hashem. So I have a kula. So since it's l'tovas hakatan, I can have him turn off the light, which is only an issur d'rabbanan. If it's the Tovas Atzmo, if it's the Shas Hadchak. However, if he sleeps in his own room, I'm sorry, if my baby sleeps in the baby's room and I sleep in my room, so there, I'm asking him to violate an Issa D'Rabbanan, L'Tzorach, not Atzmo, for my Tzorach. And that would be Aser across the board to ask a baby to do that. What you could do is, again, if you have a little baby, you just hold him near the light switch and, you know, 3 times out of 4, he will play with the switch and then you grab him away before he could switch it back on. That's lovely, Gilas.
What's
Rechasmo? No. If you just hold him there, if I just hold the baby, you know, like a 1-year-old, a 2-year-old, I just hold him here, And he plays that I'm not telling him to do it. I can't tell him. You see that? Push that. No, that he can't do. If it'll be an Issa Drabbanon, he's turning it off, which is an Issa Drabbanon, as the Tzorach Atzmo, then you might be able to say, you know, you turn it off. Okay, let's move to the next shir. Next shir is Rav Shechter's shir, Adina de Lachlus Adina, and Mistira. And after that, we're going to do Mezuzah, and we'll probably end with that. So the Shulchan Aruch says Dina de Machlus Adina, but Gazlanusa, Gazmasanusa de Machlus is not. So in the olden days, when taxes were a violation of everything fair, they were unfair. So that, there, at that time, you might not have had to pay taxes, even if it would have been the Dina de Machlusa, because it wasn't a fair thing. However, nowadays, taxes are fair, so it's a whole different story. So where does this come from? So this comes from the fact that the Gemara tells us that Bnei Yisrael wanted to have a melech. Shmuel HaNavi said, you better be careful. If you have a melech, he might levy taxes on you. And there's machlokas early Amoram, Rav and Shmuel, if Shmuel HaNavi was only threatening them, but not that a king could actually do that, or indeed, the way we do Paskin is that Shmuel says, Kol HaAmor B'Parshas Melech, Melech Mutter Bo. Right? Shmuel the Amora is saying that was Shmuel the Navi said he meant. Just to clarify that. So therefore, that's what Shulchan Aruch Paskin's like, and therefore the government, the Melech, has a right to levy taxes, and that Shmuel who lived in Eretz Yisrael, right? So it sounds like even in Eretz Yisrael, the government has a right to levy taxes. There is a famous Ron in the Darim. It's more famous than any other Ron in the Darim, because it says you don't have to pay taxes in Eretz Yisrael. So the Ron in the Darim says that since the that taxation is charging rent for the land, so the monarch owns the land, that he's charging rent to you, so you have to pay your rental fee. But in Eretz Yisrael, it says around where everybody owns Eretz Yisrael, so therefore there's no right to charge taxes. Points out of Shechter, this opinion of the Ran, not only did it not pass like it, didn't even make it as a Yesh Omrim into the Shulchan Aruch. And therefore we don't pass like it, so it's a beautiful Svara, but it doesn't apply. Either way, Rav Shechter assumes that the idea of taxes is working within an entirely different operation. It's nothing to do with Dina de Machlus Adina per se, because nowadays our taxes are not the government's right to levy taxes as it once was, but rather the taxes that we have in democratic countries is one of a shutfus, just like in a shutfus. The majority of the shutfin have the right to force the minority shutf to do as the majority rules. If we have representation, if the government decides that they're providing, they want to, you know, the majority of the country assumes that there should be garbage pickup and there should be public schools and there should be support for the arts and there should be a National Institute of Health. So even though I happen to not want to support the arts and I happen not to want to support public schools because I pay private tuition to my yeshiva, I'm subsumed under the rove of the shutfus. And then from Mihilchus Shutfin, not Mihilchus Dina D'Machlus Adina, Mihilchus Shutfin, I would be bound to do with the majority of the my Shutfin. Who are my Shutfin? I Shutfin New York City. I Shutfin of New York State, that's called state taxes. And I have Shutfin of the other people in the United States of America called federal taxes. So the Shutfus would be Mechayev me to do it. And if I don't, so I'm stealing from the Shutfus, every other person who's in the Shutfus of my city, state, or country. Okay, talking about Dina de Machlus Adina, what are the parameters of Dina de Machlus Adina? How far does it go? Well, Dina de Machlus Adina, first of all, as we mentioned, provides the, again, even not in a democracy, even in the olden days, it allows the levying of taxes. It allows Shava Kesef, it allows the definition of Kesef, which we'll talk about in a moment, to define money. As far as Ribbis is concerned with, I had a Ribbis shout out today, a guy lent money in Eretz Yisrael, but he wants to be paid back in America for whatever reason. So the definition of money is defined by the Dina de Machlus Adina. Dina de Machlus Adina allows the government also the Ha'anish, and Dina de Machlus Adina also allows the government to put out a legal system. So one of those things that we said in terms of defining money, Dina de Machlus Adina defines money, and therefore it has to, in order for a coin to work for Pinyan Ma'aseh Shein, it has to be a matbea that is approved by the kingdom of the land. That's for any two ikar to reject the Medina will not do not and would not be able to, nor do they use a shekel as a matbea upon which to be mechalel Pinyan Ma'aseh Shein. Um fine. When do we apply the rule of Dira D'Malchus Adina? So, two things you have to know about Dira D'Malchus Adina. Number one, whenever you have two Jews, there's no such thing as Dira D'Malchus Adina. Dira D'Malchus Adina only applies between one Jew and one Gentile. I mean, not one, but between Jew and Gentile. If there's an interaction between Jew and Gentile, that's when we apply Dira D'Malchus Adina. As opposed to, for example, Yerusha. Yerusha, by definition, is between within a Jewish family. We're not going to apply Dira D'Malchus Adina how the Dira D'Malchus Adina applies Hilchos, you know, its laws of inheritance law, because between two Jews, they do not apply Dina D'Malchus Adina. Similarly, another parameter is that Dina D'Malchus Adina only applies to financial areas. I also had a shot like this last week. Somebody wanted to know if Dina D'Malchus Adina should apply for something that would have nothing to do with money. I don't remember what it was. So again, Dina D'Malchus Adina only applies for financial issues, not by Isser. I think this is what Rav Shechta said. Rav Shechta said that, okay, there's one exception. One exception is that even though Dina D'Malchus Adina does not apply between two Jews, Rav Henkin says that there can be a situation where it does apply to two Jews. That's if the Dina D'Malchus was established L'tikun HaMedina. If it's established with Tikkun HaMedina, well, Tikkun HaMedina is something that's important to the Jewish residents as well. Because the government has to take care of Jews and non-Jews alike. So like bankruptcy, for example, which is a Tikkun HaMedina, or what? Rav Henkin.
What does Tikkun HaMedina mean?
Tikkun HaMedina means for the betterment of society.
Okay.
Rent control. Bankruptcy law. So here, what happens, this is very common, you have, you know, lots of people in my shul own buildings, own apartment buildings, and certainly, you know, in Brooklyn and Williamsburg, all of them, they're Jewish tenants. So does rent control apply? So since rent control is established by the government for Tikkun HaMedina, therefore, even though the landlord says, I want to double your rent this year to make more money, he'll say, Yankala, the rent tenant will say, no, it's there's rent control. The landlord will say, no, there's no Dina D'Malchus here because you're Jewish and non-Jewish. So Yankel the tenant could respond, no, this is the Tikkun HaMedina, and therefore you are bound, even though we're both Jewish, you will be bound to the Dina D'Malchus, the Dina of rent control, v'chadome. Another case that we will allow Dina D'Malchus, the Dina between two Jews. So we have what? What we had, if it's the Tikkun HaMedina, we have now another one. The Shach says that if halacha is silent about something between two Jews, then Dina D'Malchus Adina will bind the parties. Says the Chazanish, there's no such thing in halacha. If halacha is silent about it, that just means that it's mutter, pater, chai, whatever it is. No such thing as halacha doesn't have what to say. So the Chazanish rejects that. Another case where we will apply Dina D'Malchus Adina even between two Jews is if there's a kind of business that the business has both Jews and Goyim alike. So for example, let's say you have a store. So there are certain laws about returns. But let's say those laws are American laws or New York State laws. And when a Jew walks into my store, I want him not to have those warranty laws. So that's not going to be functional. Like every Jew is going to have one set of laws who walks into my store, and every guy has a different set of laws. So I'm going to have to say, are you Jewish or are you Goyish? Before I give you a return or a warranty or something. That won't make sense. And therefore, it will be as though, since my service or my store is provided to both Jews and Gentiles alike, it will be like Ki'ilu Hisnu, that we're going to follow the Minhag HaMedina. It's as though when every Jew walks into my store, it's Ki'ilu Hisna that he's adopting and I'm adopting to deal with him like the laws of the land governing this store, this kind of business transaction. Let's now finish off this year to talk about not Dina D'Malchus Adina, but about Mesira. What are the parameters of Mesira? Mesira is a very in Rosh Hashanah's eyes, is a very misunderstood term that's bandied about. The Gemara, of course, tells us, we know that Bez is Makin V'onshin Shlom and Hadin, and the Rishonim say that applies not only to a basin, but even to a non-Jewish government. And the story that illustrates this point, that that you're allowed to really turn somebody into the government, even if it's not halachic, it's not what the halacha would punish, Isaac Goren, Bava Metzia, Bava Gulazibur, the son of Shimon Bar Yochai, who was hired by the Roman government to find Jewish criminals and to execute those Jews. Wait a second. Jewish law does not allow a thief to be executed. Nevertheless, the Gemara said, the conclusion of the Gemara is that Eliyahu Navi says, what are you doing giving these people over? He says, I'm removing kotzim min hakerem. And Eliyahu Navi says, it's pasnished for you. It's not appropriate. It's not a nice thing for you to do. The Rishonim learned from there that it's not aser. It's just not a nice thing to do. So therefore, if you want to be an IRS guy and turn in your fellow, work for the IRS and turn in people with Jewish last names, you're allowed to do it. It's just not a nice job for a nice Jewish boy. That's what you see from that. However, the limitation is that the only time we will allow, this is not called Masir, again, turning somebody into the law system, into the Gaiish, into the secular legal system, is not called Masir. Masir is only if you're allowing things that even the secular law wouldn't require this person to suffer. So for example, let's say a person did something that, again, there's one, let me add one new point. In order to permit Mesira, it has to be that the Jew violated some halacha. Some halacha. If it's totally mutin halacha, then there's no, you didn't save the whales when you're supposed to save the whales, or you did pollution. And there's a criminal, it's a criminal act, so I don't know if you could do Mesira, you can't turn that person into the court, because there's no halacha against, we'll talk about Nizki Shechinim, but let's assume pollution is not aser. Let's assume not saving the whales is not aser. So then you're not allowed to turn the person into the government. However, if a person cheated, a person did something aser, a person lied, a person stole, then you have every right to turn that person into the court system, even if the court system has a punishment that is far worse than the Jewish law would allow. So, if, for example, somebody steals or somebody lies and you want to turn him in, that's okay, even if he's going to be punished worse than what Torah allows. However, if he'll end up getting punished even more than the state, than the law demands, for example, if you get, apparently, I don't know this, but it's just that state prisons are terrible, that even, let's say you're supposed to get 5 years in prison, but you also get, raped by your male inmates, and you also get beaten by your fellow inmates, so that even the secular law didn't say that 5 years in state prison is supposed to mean getting raped and getting beaten. So there, Urshefter said, we would not, that would be what Masira is. So Masira would be, let me define Masira now. Masira is when you turn a Jew over to a secular authority and he will get punished more than the secular authority even allows according to Dina the Malchus Dina. So if the punishment is 10 years in prison, he'll get 10 years in prison, more than we would give, we would just say you have to be kefal. You're allowed to turn him in. That's not called Masira. Masira, in the sense of being aser, is turning somebody over in a way that he'll get punished more than even the secular court allows. The fact that it's worse than halakha, that's not called Masira. One exception to that, two exceptions to that, is if there's chil Hashem, or the opportunity for kiddush Hashem. If you say, I don't want to testify against a fellow Jew, the judge is going to say, you're not testifying, you're refusing to testify, I subpoenaed you and you're not coming to court because you're because you don't want to testify against a fellow, one of your, chevra. So that will be a chil Hashem in the judge's eyes, and therefore there would not be an iser mesira, and that would mean that even if the guy would get punished really worse than he should otherwise deserve, even then you would be allowed to do mesira because it's at the expense of chil Hashem. If he's going to get punished appropriately for whatever the law says, 5 years in prison, he'll get 5 years in prison. That's not called Masira. Masira is when he's going to get worse than that. He's going to get sent to a state prison where he's going to get raped or beaten, which was not in his legal punishment. That would still be mutter if it's going to be a case of Chil Hashem.
Shachter wouldn't argue that's built into what happens, meaning 5 years in prison means 5 years of what happens in prison. That's intrinsically...
I don't know, maybe not.
You're saying that's intrinsically maybe not. 5 years in prison.
No, because according to official prison law, official law, you're not supposed to be beaten when you're in prison. They're supposed to take care of you. That's how I assume. Another scenario where we would permit the Masira, meaning the Masira Ha'asura, that he's suffering even more than he should, is in two scenarios. If somebody is Meitzar Es Harabim, he causes pain to people, for a pedophile, a ganav, somebody who's abusive, a con artist, there you're allowed to do Masira and even send them to, even if they'll end up in a state prison, a Ponzi artist. Fine. Similarly, a maka es chavero, so if you see, for example, a child or woman is bruised, right? Doctors, psychologists, and teachers have mandated reporting. So according to this, mandated reporting would be if you notice that your client or your patient is bruised, so the father, the husband, whoever it is, maybe it's the wife, maybe she's beating him, whoever it is maka es chavero, then you would not only be able to turn them in to the authorities, but even turn them into the authorities if the authorities, even if the authorities would do something more than what the Din of the Machlus Dina calls. So if they'll end up in state prison, b'chadome. That's the end of this shiur. B'ezus Hashem, yeah, question. If there's no violation of halacha whatsoever, then you have no right to inform this authority. I don't know the answer. If it's a makom chil Hashem and he did nothing wrong, so would you have to turn him over? I don't know the answer. Could be that. I mean, that would be a case of mystery. Maybe it's a mutter if it's makom chil Hashem. I just don't know. It could be it's okay. Yeah.
So, with the method of reporting, are we chayef to report it, or are we allowed to report it?
I don't know the answer. If you can protect the person, then you might be chayef to, because lo sam adam reacha. There's no isur mystery holding you back. But I don't want to pass him on that. Okay, Rabosai, I'm not going to review the Shiur on Yichud because I just gave it last week and I tried to present it as easily as clearly as I could in terms of the different sections, so you already know how to divide up your mind. You'll have the opportunity to review the notes. And I wish you all great Hatzlacha, Be'ezus Hashem, in the final on Tuesday. Sorry? Oh, Mezuzah, yeah, we have to continue with Mezuzah. Sorry, let's continue. 1 second. I am sorry, mezuzah, hilchos mezuzah. I'm sorry. We have to continue with hilchos mezuzah. Let me find my notes in hilchos mezuzah. Okay, Rabbi Simon's shiur on Hilchos Mezuzah. Let's begin Hilchos Mezuzah, and then we're going to finish with that. So, the first point that Rabbi Simon made was that even though there's a psul called Tasev Lomen Ha'asi that applies to building a sukkah, maybe making tzitzis, there the Torah says the word asiya. So there will be a psul of Tasev Lomen Ha'asi. However, will we apply a psul of Tasev Lomen Ha'asi? So even cases in the Torah where it doesn't say the word asiya. For example, if you put a door frame, if you have a door, some kind of archway that would not be obligated to mezuzah, and only afterwards you put on a door frame, or only afterwards you put on a lintel, right? You have a flat ceiling and two sides. So that's pata from a mezuzah because there's no thing coming down. What we call it a lintel, coming down from the ceiling. Let's say you put up a mezuzah on those two the walls that are jutting out, but and only afterwards you build a lintel coming down. So would you have tasev on ha'asli? Well, it doesn't say the word asiya. Will we apply the din? So the Kasha Glover suggested that if you look at Unkelis teaches into the pasuk when it says uchsavtam ames mezuzot beisach visharecha. He is Unkelis himself translates the word of uchsavtam not to just write but also to make to make it to be kaveyat there. So therefore, according to Unkelis' addition to the Taish of the Pasuk, there is an understanding of Asiya, as opposed to other mitzvahs, like by Kshiras HaTfilin, Unkelis doesn't add that extra word of Asiya, so Tfilin might not have Tassalon HaAsay, whereas Mezuzah might, yes, have Tassalon HaAsay. Okay, that was just introductory, but sort of a side thing that Rabbi Samuel Sorge said to make me feel good because I had heard this shiur a number of times. So you want to be mechader something. Let's talk about a mezuzah. A house has to have a mezuzah. What's a house? So Gemara and Sukkah tells us that any room that's dalet amos by dalet amos, according to Ramosha, that's 7 foot 3 inches by 7 foot 3 inches. Chaz Nish holds it's more. Ruchai Noah holds it's less. So if it's dalet al dalet, that's a bias, and therefore any room in a house that has dalet al dalet is chayav in a mezuzah. What happens if it's not literally 4 by 4, but it is a square footage of 16, like it's an 8 by 2, or it's a 16 by 1 even. So there it's a machlokas. The Rambam says that 8 by 2 would be chayav. The Rosh says, no, you need a minimum of 4 on each side. And therefore, we will be we will put up a mezuzah, but we will not recite a bracha. Chazanish himself was makel that no, that that we don't need in that case. Let us talk about a room that's less than 4x4, but it's a room that does have a use as is in its small space. For example, a guard booth. They don't really have any guard booths on campus, do they?
Yeah, there are.
Still are? Well, oh, hell, like when I was here in college, there were like 7 guard booths. It's like a whole new
room. Is it bigger than Arbor Harbor?
Absolutely not. A guard booth is not 7 feet wide. A little guard booth? No.
If a guard booth was that big, it would
always be 7 feet. No. So, but on the other hand, a guard booth is fulfilling its full purpose of being a guard booth. So what happens if you have a room that is smaller than the requisite shear, but it does achieve its goal? It is royal dira in whatever type of dira you're trying to accomplish. So there, the Chamud Daniel says, since it's chazil milsa for whatever its functionality is, that would be obligated, even less by him down by a dalit. That is, again, a chumran, hamiyakar din. So therefore, we will put a mezuzah there, even though it's less than dalit, but without a bracha. So for example, if you have a closet that you can't walk into, even if it's a big closet, but you can't, it's not a walk-in closet, we'll never need a mezuzah. If you have a walk-in closet that's less than dalal al dalal, so then the Chamud Daniel would say, since it's chazil milse, it's doing its purpose, it would be chayav in a mezuzah. So we'd put it up without a bracha. However, you have an issue with something like closets. I had this shayla, somebody in my shul had a little porch off of his bedroom, tiny little porch off the bedroom. Porch is less than dalal al dalal, but you can have a closet off the bedroom. The closet would be less than dalal dalal, but it's going from the closet into the bedroom. It's going into a room that's dalal al dalal. So again, going into the closet is too small. The porch is too small. But coming from the porch or the closet into the bedroom is dalal al dalal. So Rebbe Kvager says, in that case, you would put the mezuzah on the, well, I'll call it the left side. I mean, the right side of the closet or the porch going into the bedroom, which is when I enter the closet on the left side going into the closet. Rabbi Simon does not like that because he says, wait a second. There's only one way. Life works in one direction. Derech biyasa. Right? Beischa, derech biyasa. There's one way going in, and we don't. And going out is not called going into the bedroom. It's called... You go backtracking. Thank you. If you go into the closet, so on your right, the closet is less than 4x4, you don't have to put a mezuzah. To say that when you come from the closet into the bedroom, that's not called coming into the bedroom, that's going backtracking to the bedroom. That's not called derech biyasa, and therefore Simon does not like this Rebbe Kveiger, although many poskim do pass in like this Rebbe Kveiger. Very important to know that you never place a mezuzah on both sides of the door, nor do you, if you place two mezuzahs on one mezuzah, one doorpost, that's a violation of Al Tosef. Let's talk about doorways to multiple living spaces. So like a doorway to a Shar Ha'ir. So the Gemara says explicitly that Shar Ha'ir is Chayv Mezuzah. Rashi says only if it's Rov Yisrael. So what would be an apartment where the majority of people in the apartment are Yisrael? So it sounds like it would be Chayv in a Mezuzah. However, Rav David Feinstein says, no, apartment would only be Chayv if it's all Jewish. Why? Because the fact that there's a shutvas of an akum, it patters you. So wait a second. Why would a shutvas akum pat you in an apartment? As long as there's a rov, let me rephrase that. How come the shutvas of even one akum in a majority Jewish building would patter the apartment building? Whereas Rashi said, as long as the rov of the city is Yisrael, the whole city needs a mezuzah. So the Or Sameach says that there are two kinds of chiyuv mezuzahs. The mezuzah for where you live, for a dira, and there, any guy's shutev there, it's pater. However, shar ha'ir is not because it's shar ha'ir, the ear is a dira. It's just that it's a different mechayiv mezuzah. It's a mezuzah that has to be put there because it leads to diras. As long as it leads to Jewish diras, where the rov is Jewish diras, that would be called a shar for Jews, and therefore would require a mezuzah. That's one possibility, but in either way, if a mezuzah would be placed and would be desecrated by the Gaim, it would not be required, removed by the Gaim, it wouldn't need to be up there. The Rambam, of course, holds that in order to be chayav mezuzah, there has to be a delas. A doorway is not sufficient, but a delas is required. We are machmir to put it even in a doorway, but we won't make a bracha. So if you have an apartment, very often the only room in the apartment that might actually warrant a mezuzah with a bracha might be the bedroom. The front door oftentimes has an anteroom that's less than dollar dollar. All the other openings are not with a door. So you might only make a bracha on the bedroom in many typical Washington Heights apartments. Let's talk about the height of the mezuzah. So the Shulchan Aruch says it has to be on the Shlish HaElyon. If you put it below the Shlish HaElyon, you're mamish not yotzi at all. If you put it too high, within the top tefach of the Torah post, you're also not yotzi at all. So you have to have the entirety of the mezuzah in the Shlish HaElyon, ideally at the bottom of the Shlish HaElyon. What happens if it's a very tall door? The Yerushalmi says that you should put it at shoulder height. So is this a, why would the fact that it's tall door change the halacha? So some suggest that there's no, it's not that we have two halachas, one halacha is put it at shoulder height, another halacha is put it at Shlish HaElyon. The reason why you're supposed to put it at Shlish HaElyon is because that's shoulder height. So if you have a very tall door where the Shlish HaElyon is taka very much higher than shoulder height, there you should just follow the regular halacha of putting it at shoulder height, and it's really not a contradiction in any which way. Accordingly, what happens when you have the kitchens in Washington Heights where you have a doorway, but there's a cabinet that juts into the doorway on the right and on the left? So are you going to put on the Shlish HaElyon of the entire doorway, or the Shlish HaElyon around your hip or your thigh height, which would be a Shlish HaElyon of the cabinet that's there? So there are those who say, based on what we said earlier, that the point of Shlish HaElyon is not an objective din of Shlish HaElyon, but rather it's just a general shear of shoulder height. So accordingly, you would not put it on the mezuzah on the cabinet where they jut out, but rather in the doorway that's a further recessed, which would be around shoulder height. Fine. Let's talk about leaving mezuzahs there. If you're moving and you have mezuzahs on the door, you halacha, the Gemara says you have to, you're not allowed to take the mezuzahs with you to provide the shmir for those who come after you. There are different reasons that the Rishon would give. Either you don't want to take away from the kedusha that the mezuzah is serving, you don't want to take away from the shmirah. There's another reason I don't remember. But the Ramah says that if you're allowed to charge the person who's coming after you. If he doesn't want to pay, then you're allowed to take it. Rav Badi is mechadesh that if you don't know who will move in or who you're going to collect money from, you're also allowed to take it with you. What often happens if it's an apartment that's going to be, most apartments are painted between residents, and if they're going to be taken off for the painting for the new tenant, then you could just take it off because it had to be removed for painting, and then once you're no longer there, you don't have to, you could take them with you, keep them in your pocket. Everybody. That's accepted halach. I don't recall. Okay, Kabir Moshe, don't recall. Let's talk about different rooms that are obligated in mezuzah. Let's talk about a storage place, a beis haotzar. Storage places, closets, basements, garages, under stairs. All of these are yes, chayev and mezuzah. Of course, if it's less than 4x4, it'll only be a chumrah. But we do put a mezuzah there anyway. However, if it's only a storage place that's connected to your dira, if it's a self-storage on the middle of a highway somewhere, or it's a not connected to your dira, it wouldn't be obligated. However, garage door, whether attached or disattached, we do put on a mezuzah there. But perhaps if it's a disattached, you might not make a bracha. Fine. Beis Medrash, I'm sorry, shul is pater, unless someone lives there, but assuming no one lives there, shul is pater from mezuzah. Beis Medrash is 2 days in the Shulchan Aruch, possibly because it's more, you know, the yeshiva guys sleep there, they eat there. And therefore we're machmir, but we don't make a bracha. I'll have to say that it might not warrant a bracha. An office, a chanus. Shulchan Aruch says a chanus is pater. Taz says because you're not there at night, so it's only diras arai. However, some say, this Vishuddha says, it might only be like a makeshift market store where it's sort of like very, very temporary. But if you have a real office that's always there, maybe you should. So we do put a mezuzah there, but we wouldn't make a bracha. And similarly, if it would be shasat chak, it would be very awkward if you'd have a mezuzah there, or very difficult for work reasons, then perhaps you wouldn't need to make a din. Let's talk about rentals. Let's say you have a rental, of course, it's only chayim midrabanan because it's not beis secha. We do make a bracha on rentals because it is chiyuv derabanan. The same we make a bracha on Eretz Chanukah. What happens if it's a rental? So Schiris is potter for all Lamed Yom. And if the Chiyuv begins on the 31st day, so on one hand, maybe you should just wait till the 31st day when you're actually Chayev. So the Nesivus Derech Chaim says, that's only true, when do we say 30 days? It's only if you plan to stay less than 30 days. Then you're not Chayev. But if you have a lease, and you know Mitril, you're going to be living there for 6 months, for a year, then you have to put the mezuzah up immediately on day one. Rav Shach likes to quote this, if you're signing a lease, the whole reason why it's pater is because schiris lo kanya. But if you're saying signing a lease, then you are kanya for those 12 months, and therefore the whole 30-day leniency will not apply. Moshe's Rav Mechudesh took a svara. He says that you could put it up now, and on day 31, you touch the mezuzah and you make the bracha then, which is difficult, according to some. Moshe didn't hold it's difficult, but others, Rav Soloveitchik, for example, said, but wait a second, you can make a bracha without a maisa mitzvah. Touching it is not a maisa mitzvah, it's not being conveyed at the door. Obviously, Moshe hold it's not a problem. Rabbi Simon and Ruchan likes to hold, like Ruchan Kanievsky, that when you're moving in with a lease, you could put it up right away, make a bracha right away. That's what Rabbi Simon likes to follow. Next halacha. There's a halacha that's also l'shamash mitasa b'fnei kisvei hakodesh. So therefore, if there's a room that a husband and wife sleep in, theoretically, the mezuzah's presence should be a problem for their intimacy. So therefore, mahalchim will go min hakal hachamer. The Aruch HaShulchan says, wait a second. If the Torah tells you, obviously it's mitzvah ona, and the same Torah tells you to put a mezuzah on your house, on your bedroom, so the Torah is telling you that it's not a problem. That is not going to be considered an issue whatsoever. It's just... Here it is, Mutter. Shulchan Aruch Rav says, oh no, if it's attached to a wall, it's like a Rosh Hashanah b'fnei atzmo. So we're not worried that it's in the same room as the husband and wife. Chai Adam says that, no, you could be mekel because there are two wrappings. So obviously you have to have in mind that one of them, whenever you have two wrappings to be matir something, one of them has to not be miyuchad. So when you wrap it with aluminum foil, with plastic wrap or wax pip, you have in mind that this is not, you have in mind that this should be a hefsik. That it's not in your mind. You're saying it's not miyuchad for the mezuzah. It should be considered a hefsek.
Number three is who?
The Chai Adam. Finally, the Stipler says, Tach, you should just hang a shirt, put a little nail above your mezuzah, and hang a shirt over it before tashmish. That could be somewhat odd if there are people walking through the house.
Why is the shirt being that's what you probably have on the inside.
To cover it, right? If you have the mezuzah outside the door and the door is closed, then there's no problem. But if the mezuzah is inside the room, so if you have two coverings, you have a clear lucite thing, and you have a plastic wrap. Both of those are miyuchad for the mezuzah, so you don't have the heter of kis pesach kis, if both are miyuchad. When you have the heter of kis pesach kis, you have to have one that's not miyuchad for.
One
has to be not miyuchad, right. We should be zochet to have the protection of mezuzah, and the protection of Torah, which is megan. Even when we're learning and we're not learning, we should be zocha to learn well, to know halacha, and to do very well, Be'ez Hashem, on the upcoming Friday.